Our guest today is Mr. Richard Sanders. For 15 years, Richard was the host of a radio show which dealt with peace issues on CKCU Community Radio in Ottawa. Currently, he is the coordinator of the Coalition to Oppose the Arms Trade, or COAT, and he is also the editor of the print magazine Press for Conversion. Welcome to the program, Richard.
Well, thank you.
The most recent edition of Press for Conversion features a 52-page report entitled Operation Embedded Complicity, Canada Playing Our Part in the Business of War. And from what I've read, it seems that Canada has been playing a pretty huge and, well, pretty complex part in the business of war. Could you give us a sort of breakdown and maybe explain, you know, first off, what our main role or roles are in the weapons-making industry?
Okay. Well, in terms of the military industry, Canada is one of the world's top military exporters, actually, believe it or not. I mean, people probably don't realize this, but we're about number 12 in the world in terms of top military exporters of major weapon systems. And major weapon systems are not really even what Canada produces for the most part. We mostly produce components, high technology parts, components for major weapon systems that are assembled elsewhere. Most of our exports go to the United States, which would be to be expected.
Right.
So that's one of the ways that Canada contributes has contributed to the war in Iraq, through providing components and services for major weapon systems, dozens of different major weapon systems that have been used in the most current war in Iraq.
You know, most Canadians really kind of like to pat themselves on the back, as you know, and thinking, you know, we're a peacekeeping nation, you know, sort of quote unquote, and you know, especially for not sort of, you know, in their minds, in the media's minds as well, I guess,
right.
Contributing
yeah.
to the war in Iraq. Is this justified in any way, or?
I don't believe so, no. I think it's one of the big myths that we have about Canada. It's part of how we define ourselves as a country. We think of ourselves as a peacekeeping nation, peacemakers, that kind of thing, playing a role, promoting peace in the world, and et cetera. Actually, in terms of strict peacekeeping, the military function of peacekeeping, as you know, originally understood by the United Nations, Canada doesn't do that anymore. We're not, as far as I know, we don't have any peacekeeping troops. Canada has been sending troops to support wars led by the United States, Iraq in 91, Somalia, the Yugoslav War.
Right.
And these are all real wars. They weren't peacekeeping missions in any way. You know, we often hear about Canada, like it's a common joke that most Canadian comedians will use in some part of their repertoire. And it's a pet peeve of mine. You know, they'll always make fun of Canadian military, the equipment that we have.
Right.
Actually, Canada spends a lot on the military. We're, again, in about the top 10 in the world. We're about the 10th biggest military spender in the world. We have very expensive equipment. We have multi-billion dollar warships. And during the recent war in Iraq, Canada's Navy led the coalition naval force in the Persian Gulf. We were leading it.
Right,
you don't do
our
that
technology.
With little, you know, tin cans that you hear about that Canadian comedians make fun of our military. But actually, we have state-of-the-art multi-billion dollar warships, and they were actually leading the coalition's navy in the Gulf and escorting U.S. aircraft carriers so that they could launch their airstrikes against Iraq. That's one of the ways that we contributed to this war in Iraq that most Canadians probably didn't hear about. We also had Canadian military personnel aboard AWACS aircraft. Those are E-3s, American E-3 aircraft, and these are aircraft that are used to direct air wars, kind of nerve centers, mobile centers for coordinating battles to manage the battles, just to make sure the planes take off and are flying in a way that's coordinated so that they can control their weapons and drop their weapons in the right places and not run into each other, kind of flight control aircraft. And so we had Canadian military personnel aboard those. So that was another way that we helped coordinate the current Iraq war. Another thing we did was Canada provided war planners. These are military strategists, war strategists, and they were for a while they were at the U.S. Central Command headquarters at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida, and then about two dozen of these Canadian war strategists moved with CENTCOM, Central Command, to the Persian Gulf just before the war, and they helped to coordinate that war. So these are military planners and strategists that are overseeing the whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, we heard that Canada didn't take part in the war, and it's true, we didn't have very many ground troops. We did have some ground troops. There was even a Canadian that was killed in a battle on the ground in Iraq in the spring.
That's right. We did hear a little bit
about
that.
Yeah. It got some flack, but what we didn't hear about was these war planners. Mm. We didn't hear about how our military personnel were coordinating air battles. We didn't hear about how our Navy was leading the fleet in the Persian Gulf in protecting U.S. aircraft carriers. We didn't hear about Canadian military transport planes, CC-130s, that were listed by the U.S. military as having helped to supply the coalition forces during the Iraq War. The Canadians then came back and said, well, no, those were for the Afghan War. And the Americans said, no, you did provide us with CC-130 military transport planes, and those were used to supply our forces during the Iraq War. So I think the Canadians were denying it. I think the Americans, it's probably, we can believe the Americans when they said that that Canada was providing them with those military transport planes.
Yeah, I didn't Colin Powell at one point say that we were probably the third or fourth biggest contributor to the war in Iraq?
I'm not sure if Colin Powell said it, but
right.
If you look at what all the different countries in the Coalition of the Willing provided, Canada is right up there. I mean, we're not actually mentioned on the list because we weren't willing to be known as part of the Coalition of the Willing. We were unwilling to be listed on the list.
Right.
But we actually did provide so much help and support to the Americans.
Why is that, do you think, that we didn't want to be on the list?
Well, I think that our government realizes that the Canadian public was against the war. The Canadian public did not want Canada to participate.
Right.
But the government wanted to participate because they have been participating in U.S. wars. They're very close to the Americans. Our militaries are intertwined in so many different ways that our government wanted to do as much as it possibly could to help the Americans while at the same time pretending that they were doing nothing to help, pretending that they were taking a strong moral stand against the war and not participating, boycotting the war. And now it's just become part of this mythology that we have, that Canada stood up against the Americans and refused to take part in the war. It's not true. I mean, there's a number of other ways that we helped as well. We let U.S. warplanes fly over Canadian airspace on their way to Iraq.
Right.
We let U.S. warplanes stop for refueling in Newfoundland and Prince Edward Island. And, of course, a lot of these planes and weapon systems were the training for the pilots and the exercises, the practice runs for the aircraft were done in Canadian airspace. Low-level training, bombing exercises are allowed in seven different flight corridors in Canada. So the United States can test out its bombers and has done so in the various different corridors across Canada. Another thing we did was we sent troops to Afghanistan, and that freed up American troops so that they could go to Iraq. And, of course, there's the diplomatic support, although the government made, you know, a pretense that they were against the war and that we weren't participating in the war. They were also saying things to support the war. For instance, Prime Minister Chrétien said that the U.S. had a right to go to war with Iraq and that Canadians should not question the war. He actually said that. We shouldn't question the war because to question the war or the reasons for the war would give comfort to Saddam Hussein.
Right.
So in other words, he's saying that peace activists are supporting Saddam Hussein, which is just totally nonsense.
That's, you know, the kind of thing that comes out of, you know, Rush Limbaugh and the Bush administration and people like that. So it hardly seems that he's standing against them. And he's basically, you know, sort of spitting out the same rhetoric in a way. I wanted to kind of get back to the business, which is a big, I think, you know, a really big part of how Canada. I'm just wondering, how long has Canada had what seems to be a very profitable war industry? As far as weapons making and selling it to the United States and so those weapons are used in how many wars? How far does it go back?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know too much about the older history of Canada's military production and export to the U.S. I do know that we've been doing it at least since the Vietnam War. We were big suppliers during that war of even stuff like of napalm. And a lot of different military equipment was produced in Canada, and we gave it to the United States for their use in Vietnam. We knew full well what they were using it for, and of course, something like 3 to 5 million people were killed in that war in Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. And Canada played a big role in that, even though, again, the same sort of thing. At the time, Canada said, well, we're not taking part in the war, you know, we're not participating. And yet we were supplying the United States with military equipment. It's the point now where, in 2002, Canada is the number one military supplier to the United States of any country. But how far it goes back, it probably goes back at least to the Second World War, but I'm only familiar with it more or less for the last 20 years is what I've been studying it in. I do know that we were big suppliers during the Vietnam War.
It would seem that these military industries, from what I read in your article, are, you know, they do quite well. They're quite profitable. Yet the Liberal government and previous governments still see fit to give away literally billions of dollars in tax money or what's often referred to as corporate welfare to these, you know, really well-off corporations. Could you talk a bit about how corporate welfare is and how it relates to Canadian weapons manufacturers?
Sure. Well, you're quite right, and this is one of the areas that I looked at in this report is Industry Canada. In particular, I looked at two different programs that are run that have been part of Industry Canada, Defense Industry Productivity Program, which started in 69 and went to about 96. And then it was replaced by Technology Partnerships Canada. And so I looked at the handouts that the government, the amount of money that the government gave away, and it was just to about, I've got a list of about, I don't know, 150 companies here that received over $3 billion. And there's one company in particular, Pratt & Whitney Canada, that received just over $1 billion.
On its own?
On its own.
Wow.
One company received more than $1 billion over that time period. And then other companies that have received a lot. De Havilland received about almost half a billion. Bombardier, $250 million. And MIL got another $250 million. So that's a lot of money to be handing out, you know, and you hear a lot often from the government about, you know, how they don't have enough money to help out with hospitals or schools or, you know, healthcare and different things like that. There always seem to be scrambling for money and social interest groups that are trying to get things that are needed by the public have a hard time squeezing money out of the government for these basic things that we need. and yet they very quite sort of secretly hand out billions of dollars to these private corporations that, as you point out, are very profitable. Why give billions of dollars to profitable corporations, especially military industries?
Yeah.
Do we really want to be supporting these corporations? Is that what the Canadian public wants its tax money to go into? So it's quite scandalous. And then I think, and then if you also look at the reverse flow of money, which is another thing that I looked at in this report, was the amount of money that's flowing from military corporations to the political parties. You
right.
and I can, you know, we can make a donation to any party that we like. And we get a bit of a tax write-off for doing that. Well, corporations, of course, do the same thing, and military corporations have been giving away lots of money to the political parties as well. So that's interesting, and sometimes the top donors to the Liberal Party are also recipients of these handouts or grants from the government. And another thing about these handouts or these donations that the government gives to military corporations is that they're often described as loans.
Right.
But then over the decades, very few of these loans are actually given back.
I was going to ask you, does that money ever get recouped, or is it just basically here, have it?
I think that it's basically a gift, it's a donation, but
right.
that it's described as a loan. Maybe it makes it easier to pretend to the public that you're going to get the money back, but they've received very little of that money back, like the repayable contributions. Technology Partnerships Canada,
right?
They authorized $1.6 billion in these so-called loans, and only 2.6% were ever paid back. Now, the Defense Industry Productivity Program, of the $2.5 billion, 18% was paid back, but that's over, you know, that was over 20 years ago. So,
and these companies, we should say again, are bringing in hundreds of millions of dollars in profits pretty much annually as well, right?
They're huge corporations, and they
yeah.
do make a lot of profits. Of course, there's
sure.
you know, there's a lot of different companies, so it's hard to really generalize about them, but you know, they are profitable corporations. Why are we giving them so much money?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly, first of all, you know, they are, you know, war corporations, you know, so do we want to be involved in that? And then, you know, second of all, you know, they're very profitable. They're certainly probably Canadian businesses who could use that money that are, you know, not doing as well, perhaps.
Right. I mean, it's a way of supporting an industrial sector. If the government, and the government has a lot of money to you, well, it's our money, but the government has a lot of money and can support different sectors and influence the growth of different sectors. We could be promoting the growth of environmental industries, for example, solar energy, or, you know, any number of different things that we could be helping to grow and to develop as industries of the future. But instead, a lot of our money is being sunk into these high-tech military corporations that are making parts for major weapon systems, and it's pretty horrendous the kinds of weapons that we're supporting. And what probably the main thing that comes out in this report, and we haven't touched on yet, is the fact that the Canada Pension Plan.
That was going to be my next topic, yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be your next question, right?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not aware of any other research that's been done on this, certainly not looking into the military investments made by Canada Pension Plan Investment Board.
Right.
But the fact is that working Canadians are forced to pay money into the Canada Pension Plan, and then the government takes that money. It's invested in a number of different corporations, Canadian, U.S., and other foreign corporations. Now, what I did was I looked through the list and found that $2.5 billion, that's with a B, $1 billion of Canadians' hard-earned money is being, through the Canada Pension Plan, is being invested in domestic and foreign military corporations. And among those corporations are actually 15 of the top 20 world's biggest military corporations.
Right, so we're not just investing in Canadian corporations
The world's biggest military corporations. These are prime contractors, corporations that are manufacturing dozens of the world's most sophisticated, deadliest weapon systems.
Right.
The most deadly weapon systems ever created in the history of the planet are basically being invested in by the Canada Pension Plan. There are companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Honeywell and corporations like that. So we help them. Let's see, there's Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, United Technologies, General Electric, Textron, General Motors. You know, those are some of the top ones. And these corporations have, between 96 and 2002, they sold $350 billion worth of military equipment to the Department of Defense in the United States. So like a third of $1 trillion. This is just the top 36 military corporations in the United States that the Canada Pension Plan invests in. Those 33 or 36 companies have done a third of $1 trillion worth of military contracts to the Pentagon just in the past 7 years.
It's almost unbelievable to wrap your head around that kind of money.
Yeah, of course. It is difficult to wrap your head around those huge figures, but
certainly we know what nuclear bombs do, and all of that, which is where these companies make their money. Certainly, and now us, each individual working Canadian, I guess you could say, really.
Yeah. So these are helicopters, warplanes, like bombers, fighters, warships, artillery vehicles, tanks, howitzer-type land artillery vehicles, weapons delivery systems that deliver a very wide range of very horrendous conventional weapons used in Iraq and numerous other previous wars. We're talking about anti-personnel cluster munitions. These are bombs that you drop from a plane, and then they break up into little bomblets that then blow up. Hundreds of these little bomblets blow up, and thousands of shards of sharp metal go flying in every direction and basically kill everyone in a square kilometer area or something. And then on top of that, then they have phosphorus or some kind of incendiary device, incendiary material in them that then burns everything. So our money is being invested in these companies that make these horrendous cluster bombs and incendiary bombs and several types of cruise missiles and all sorts of dumb bombs and so-called smart missiles and cluster bomb units and things that most Canadians would not want to have anything to do with, I would hope. And they don't realize that their money is being invested in these corporations that are making these things and in the delivery systems. And the delivery systems are just as important to avoid investing in as the bombs themselves and the missiles themselves, because without the delivery systems, like the warplanes and the devices, the missile launchers and things, the bomb is not really very dangerous unless you can actually get it to the place where it'll kill people.
Does the investment board, they invest in Canadian arms makers as well, I'm assuming. And what's the breakdown, sort of? Are we investing more here in Canada or down in the States? Not that it matters all that much to someone like me, but just, you know, if someone wanted to argue that, well, we're investing in Canadian workers, for instance, or, right, or something to that degree, I guess.
Well, there's a number of things I could say about that.
Sure.
Yes, we do invest in Canadian military contractors. And as I said before, most of what Canadian military contractors produce, you know, it's component parts, high-tech electronic component parts. We don't make very many complete weapon systems here in Canada. There are some exceptions. There's the light armored vehicles that are made in London, Ontario. It used to be General Motors Diesel Division, but it's been purchased by General Dynamics. Both of them are, of course, U.S. parent companies. But like, yeah, that's another thing. Is most of the large Canadian military companies are branch plants of the United States, of larger U.S. military companies.
Right. So there's very little Canadian ownership of these Canadian corporations that, you know, make these weapons here as well. Or are they?
Well, a lot of the big ones especially are U.S. owned. Of the $2.5 billion that the Canada Pension Plan has invested in military contractors, about $1.85 is invested in Canadian. So that's a, you know, a big percent. So that leaves, how much does that leave? That leaves about, there was about 350, about $600 million in U.S. and then about $100 million in non-U.S. foreign corporations.
What is their...
The point you said, you know, some people might say this is supporting Canadian workers and that sort of thing,
right,
you know, to support their families and its jobs and the jobs argument. Well, actually, it's not a good argument because this is the least efficient way to... I mean, if you're only concerned about creating jobs, this is the least efficient way to do it because military industries are very capital intensive. They have very expensive machinery and equipment that they need for their production lines. So the corporations end up spending a lot of money that's used to invest in them for the technology, for the assembly lines and the tooling systems and all that kind of thing. It's very capital intensive. It's not labor intensive.
Right.
Most of the money does not go to the workers. So if you were only looking at creating jobs, it's not a very efficient way. It's one of the least efficient ways of creating jobs. For instance, if you took $1 billion and invested it in healthcare and hired nurses and doctors and other healthcare professionals, you could create, I think it's 2 or 3 times as many jobs as generally in the military production sector.
So the money generated essentially is in the machinery that's made and then in the bombs themselves. It's and then it being that they're owned by American corporations for the most part, it doesn't even really go back into our economy for that matter either, does it?
Well, no. And plus, another problem with it is that you're producing stuff that is not terribly helpful to our society.
Certainly, yeah.
You're not producing... paying people to supply a service that we need, like healthcare or housing or education.
Yeah,
you're paying people to produce military equipment that they sell to the United States, and then they assemble it into a weapon system, and then they take it over to Iraq or wherever else, and wage a war. Now, is that defending us somehow? If it is defending Canadians, which Canadians' interests is it defending? Maybe the oil corporations, the chief executive officers might be quite happy, but the average Canadian is not going to really benefit very much, if at all, from these wars. And, in fact, we're going to lose out in other ways, too, because the more people that we help to kill in other countries, the more terrorists are going to be hating us and wanting retribution for, you know, having killed their brother or their sister or their mother or their blown up their house or destroyed their neighborhood or blown up their electrical facility or their water treatment plant or their purification sewage treatment plant, and then their family died from some horrendous disease. You know, when you destroy other societies it comes back to haunt you later, because then you have people that hate you and they want to they have no other means to get back at you other than terrorist actions.
Yeah, as we saw in Turkey just this past week with the British consulate and the HSBC.
So it's not making us more secure or safer at all.
No, certainly not.
Quite the opposite.
I'm just wondering, what is the investment board's sort of policy about investing?
Well, their policy is dictated to them by the government. The government, there's an act, the Canada Pension Plan Investment Board Act, and it tells them that what they have to do is invest money in the most profitable companies. And that's the criteria that they are to use. Then they, in turn, work out more details and come up with a plan, and their plan does exactly that, and it clearly states that they do not use any ethical or moral, environmental, social criteria in determining which corporations they'll invest in. They're very clear about that, and they're very defensive about it. They say, well, you know, that they can't do otherwise. It's too complicated. You know, there's too many different Canadians with different views. How can they possibly invest in using any ethical criteria?
Right.
So the criteria that they basically use are it's profitable and it's legal. It's got to be legal.
Right. So long as it's legal and makes lots of money, we're going to invest in
the most money as possible that they can possibly make.
Wow.
So if heroin was legal, they'd probably invest in it. Because
right.
I guess it's quite profitable. But another thing that it's perhaps off topic, but it illustrates the point, is that they also invest in the world's three largest tobacco corporations.
Where else are they putting our money?
I didn't look into other sectors, nasty things that they were investing in. I did notice in scanning the list that there were some big corporations on there that I'm sure environmental groups would have problems with, you know, polluters and mining companies and things like that, and probably corporations that as well that profit from, I was going to say slave labor, but you know what I mean, like dollar a day factories in Asia where there's no unions and terrible environmental conditions and terrible human rights violations going on, those sort of corporations, because, of course, they're legal and they're profitable. And the point about tobacco, it also illustrates the hypocrisy of it, because you have some parts of the government, like Health Canada, that spend money to try to stop Canadians from taking up the habit of smoking, because, of course, it costs us billions of dollars for our health system to look after these people when they start dying from cancer and all the other diseases that you get from smoking.
Sure.
So here we are spending money, you know, on advertising campaigns and public education to try to stop smoking. On the other hand, they're forcing all working Canadians to invest their money, their retirement money, in these very corporations. I mean, it's incredible. Totally counterproductive. I mean, if you're really serious about wanting to stop the plague of armaments or the plague of the cancer deaths from tobacco, then surely you would withdraw your money from those corporations that are responsible. Why help the corporations and why encourage them and help them to do their job and profit from them if you really don't like those things? So what's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on here?
So can we assume that, you know, going back to the sort of campaign donations and friends in Ottawa kind of thing, that this is the sort of motivation behind this, if there is a motivation?
Well, I think that, you know, there may be a tendency to think along the lines of conspiracy between government and corporations. And conspiracy, the term conspiracy or conspiracy theory has a bad rap. You know, there's nothing really essentially wrong with the idea of a conspiracy. I mean, conspiracies happen all the time. A conspiracy just means that you've got people getting together to work out a plan to promote whatever they're trying to promote.
Right. We conspired to do this interview today.
Yeah, we're conspiring. The peace movement conspires all the time. We conspire with environmentalists and social activists and social justice. You know, you've got the people from churches getting together in church basements to talk to environmental activists and peace activists. That's a conspiracy, really.
Certainly.
I mean, all it is people getting together.
Right.
Nothing intrinsically insane about the idea of a conspiracy theory. And it's, but people have this, it's almost by definition a conspiracy theory is wrong. It's kind of wacky. But so I say that as a way of introduction to the idea that, of course, government people and business people do get together. They have meetings, they have conferences. I mean, we see these all the time, and there's often protests out in front, and the media covers those protests of these meetings and conferences of the G8 or whatever.
Sure.
And we have to realize that the government and industry are closely linked. In fact, you know, maybe they're not. It's not so much a conspiracy, because maybe they're the same people anyway. I mean, these are a lot of people in government are business people. I mean,
right.
Look at Martin. He's a businessman.
Yeah, he owns a giant shipping corporation.
And I think he has interests in quite a number of other big corporations as well.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Maybe he did until he had to give them to his sons or whoever, because
right.
Now he's in power.
Yeah.
But he's still a business. He's a corporate executive type of guy.
Sure.
So his interests, the way he sees the world, and the way a lot of these politicians see the world is the very same way that the corporations see the world, or people in the corporations see the world. They share the same ideology, share the same worldviews, and so they may not even they wouldn't, of course, even need to get together to discuss how are we going to do these things, because they just share a modus operandi. So you wouldn't necessarily have to get a large donation from a company in order to give them a grant.
Right.
You may give them a grant because you want to support them because you agree with what they're doing. Now, of course, if they gave you a nice political donation during your efforts to get elected, of course, that would help. And then when they call you up and say, hey, you want to play golf, these guys, they don't have to write petitions. They don't have to have letter-writing campaigns if they want to get through to Paul Martin. They just give him a call. Whereas we have to, you know, struggle like crazy to get noticed, and sometimes activists have to, you know, do stunts and sort of theatrics in order to just to get noticed, and then, of course, the media covers the theatrics and not the content or
the
crux of the story.
Sure.
They miss the story, and then they cover the theatrics. Whereas the connections, the lobbying that goes on, or the influence peddling that goes on between corporations and government is quite different. It's much more secretive. It happens behind the scenes. The media doesn't cover it. And, you know, you don't ever see big military companies or tobacco companies having to do sort of a theatrical street theater stunt in order to get noticed.
I wanted to ask you about the mainstream media, and have you had much luck in getting them to inform the public about, say, the CPP Investment Board or, these other issues we've been discussing today?
No,
others.
Not yet.
Really?
No, I've sent out emails to several hundred mainstream corporate media, and they have so far ignored me.
Completely?
Completely, yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I wish I knew. I have my suspicions, but it's not.
Sure.
I'm not too surprised. I don't know. I would have thought that the mainstream media would think it was quite an interesting story to find out that Canadians are being forced to make donations to the world's largest military companies, and that these are companies that make cluster munitions and bombers that are used to kill people in Iraq, or that have been used since the Vietnam War and have killed millions of people, and that they're forcing us to pay money into those things. I would have thought they'd think that was a good story.
To me, that seems like a huge scandal.
It's a huge scandal.
Certainly bigger than, you know, Paul Martin owns a shipping company or, you know, something
like that.
Yeah,
or they accept a plane ride or something like that.
Yeah.
The Irving family gives someone, they go to a golf course or something, and or the bingo scandal that the NDP got into in BC.
Right.
I mean, it's really small potatoes when you think about some of these other things that the government's doing, but... The media often is like that. It tends to ignore these sort of things.
It must be a very touchy issue with the people that they want access to, I suppose. It may be part of it, as far as government people and political parties and that sort of thing. Perhaps.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe they're worried about burning their bridges so they won't be able to get an interview
right.
where they can, praise whoever. It also, it's hard for them, because... media people are like, they're just ordinary Canadians, and
sure.
they've sort of bought this whole idea that Canada is the great peacekeeper, and they've invested a lot of time into telling everyone that Canada is the great peacekeeper. And so any kind of information that comes along that sort of flies in the face of that and says, well, wait a minute, actually, no, Canada is complicit in war crimes and crimes against humanity and crimes against peace, and not only is the government and government and corporations complicit, but they are forcing the Canadian public to be complicit through taking our investment retirement money and putting in these corporations. That is difficult to... How are they going to present that? Because
yeah.
they've just spent years telling us that Canada is the great peacemaker, so
right.
it sort of makes them look stupid.
I guess it would, yeah. Yeah, that's
how
a good
could they
point.
Have missed such a big story, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for so long.
Report it, because then it makes them look like they, how you know, that they haven't been doing their job, or that they've been deceiving us.
Yeah, it's either one or the other, you know.
Or the average reporter looks at this story and goes, "Whoa, this is really hard for me to wrap my brain around, because it just seems it can't be true."
Yeah.
Because we all know that Canada is the great peacekeeper, so how could this be true?
Exactly. Almost all the people I talked to, and I said, why do you think, that some reporter or, somebody somewhere in the mainstream media haven't caught on to this? And almost everyone answered with the same thing: they just don't know about it. They haven't heard about it.
No,
they're
not
aware of it.
Sent out hundreds of emails.
Yeah.
Emails are maybe not the best way to do it, but then you got my email, and that's how the information got out to other. Like, I've gotten responses from community radio stations and university radio, and from community papers and activist papers, or like church, more progressive religious papers and things like that. But no real corporate mainstream media. Another thing might be, a conflict of interest with their advertisers. If you look at the advertisers in newspapers, you'll see a lot of big corporations in there that are looking for, they're maybe looking for engineers or something to hire for their military company, and they pay a lot of money to the newspapers.
Or are part owner, perhaps.
Well,
there's all that
the editorial,
too. I guess.
The editorial line of the newspaper is quite often right wing, and they
sure.
don't want to promote stories that are considered to be, somehow anti corporate.
What do you think we can do as tax paying and or Canada Pension Plan paying Canadian citizens who now have blood on our hands? Thanks to the government and,
sure, well,
and their
we should
policies.
Try to wash it off. We should. One thing that we've done is created a website where people can find out more information, where it includes a lot of the information in our report, and so people can go to cote.openconcept.ca and get a lot of information there. You'll see a list of war machines, and find out what Canadian companies made what parts for which, war machines, like warplanes, tanks, etc. And find out a lot of the statistics behind this report. And So, because education is really a big part of what we have to do. We have to inform ourselves and help others to escape from this, the myth, you know, to try to debunk the myth, the great Canada, the great peacekeeper myth. And if people want to register their opposition to the fact that they're being forced to invest in the world's largest military corporations, we've created a petition, an online web petition at that site, the coat.openconcept.ca site, and there's a petition there. And so far in the last, I guess about 10 days since November 11th, I guess it's about 1,500 people now, or 1,600 have signed that. And I think that's going to continue to grow as more people find out about it. More people are going to go there, and it's really neat to see that, actually, because you go there and you can leave your name and what city you're from, and you can also leave a comment. So everybody who signs the petition can leave a little comment that everybody else can go and look at.
Oh.
So you see all people from all across the country are signing the petition, and you can see where they come from. And you can take, you can read their comments, and it's really inspiring to see that. You know, people are outraged and are shocked and appalled to find out that what the government's been up to.
That's certainly what I've found, is people are almost, you know, in a state of disbelief over this.
Yeah, denial. But you can't deny that. You just can't deny it, because the facts are right there. It's just very clear. You can look for yourself. At the money that the Canada Pension Plan, they themselves on their website, that's where I got the information from of what they're investing in, and then it's just a matter of finding out which of these companies are military companies. So people can sign up, sign that petition, and help to inform others. There's a link on the website that people can. There's a couple of places there. There's links so that people can send emails to politicians. And can also send emails to the media to encourage them to cover the story. And any other way that people have, newsletters or radio shows or websites that they can use to link to the to this information and to this petition, is it will be great. The more the merrier find out about it, the better, I think.
Yeah.
If Canadians knew what was going on, I think most of them would object. If enough people object, then in theory, our politicians are supposed to pay attention to what the public is saying. So if enough people objected, then the politicians would in theory have to do something about it. If they refuse to do something about it, then, well, in theory, we're supposed to be able to get rid of these guys. So if it's made into enough of an issue, then we should be able to replace them.
So if people wanted to subscribe to Press for Conversion, they should go to your website as well?
Oh, sure, yes. Right. That would be great. Press for Conversion is our magazine. It comes out usually four times a year, and a lot of the back issues are online, but it's full text there. We've covered a variety of different issues over the years. The previous issue was on the U.S. role in wars and regime changes in the Middle East and North Africa since World War II. There was another issue, one of my favorite ones, was Going to War, the American Use of War Pretext Incidents, about how in every major war since 1846 or so, at least since then, they've always used some kind of a pretext, some kind of incident that's either created or that they provoke some incident in order to justify going to war. And that was an interesting issue. Each issue deals with a different theme. The real reasons for the war against Iraq. And this current issue, the theme of it is, as you mentioned at the beginning, embedded complicity, Canada doing its part for the war, in war business.